and welcome to The Tips, where this week we are focusing on events at the Belfry for the Betfred British Masters hosted by Sir Nick Faldo, and then the Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit. As ever, we have the help of some expert guests who will be diving into the facts and figures to provide some insight into where the value may lie. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begamblerware.org. This week, we have Tom Jacobs from the Lost for Words podcast teeing it up once again with us, as well as Dave Tindall, golf writer and columnist for Betfair. Completing our four ball this week is Kit Alexander, fresh off covering the Legends Tour event over in Ireland, where Peter Baker cruised to an impressive seven-shot victory. On the DP World Tour, Tristan Lawrence narrowly defeated Joost Luiten by a single shot to claim his second title of the season. And over on the PGA Tour, Keegan Bradley romped to an emotional win at the Travelers Championship in front of a partisan crowd. So, with the honour this week, I'll come to you first, Kit, to get us underway. What did you make of Tristan Lawrence's win at the BMW International Open? It certainly was an eventful Sunday.
It always is on the DP World Tour. That's why I love it. It's never over until it's over, even when it feels like, you know, Joost Luiten's just sort of bobbing along towards that brilliant resurgence victory that his form this year has really deserved, and that makes it his fourth top three in his last 11 starts now. Tristan Lawrence has just developed that lovely little knack of finding a way to win golf tournaments. That's four in the last 18 months for him. And it's funny, you look at his form and there's always players that I kind of look at and go, you never quite know when they're going to pop up and they just suddenly every so often win. Danny Willett's like the headline of those type of players for me. He'll be doing absolutely nothing, win a big event and then go along doing absolutely nothing for a bit and then pop up and win another big one. Tristan Lawrence not quite doing it on that level yet, but on a similar kind of, there's not often many indicators that he's playing well or he doesn't build form. He'll just pop up and win, which is an absolutely brilliant thing to do. And he's found a way to do it. And yeah, four wins in 18 months by anyone's standards is incredible. It was a dramatic final round. Like you sort of thought Luiten was just getting a job done and the experience he had would help him over the line. But winning is never easy, even if you've got quite a few of them in the bank already. And I saw a really interesting tweet from, I think it was Richard Mansell, when Tristan Lawrence won, sort of replying to it saying, you know, great guy. And he plays golf, not golf swing. And I thought that was a really informative and interesting comment from a fellow player about someone like Tristan Lawrence. You know, these days we so often get caught up in the aesthetics of how a golf swing looks or ball speed numbers. But actually, it's still about getting that little white thing in the hole in the fewest amount of shots. And Tristan Lawrence, as I said, has developed a very handy knack for doing that with those four wins in the last 18 months.
Yeah, absolutely. He has. And you're saying, when's this form going to pop up? Before we get to Dave and Tom on how they went last week, friend of the show, Matt Cooper, actually had him and tipped him at 80-1. And his theory, he loves a theory, was the thin air theory. He did well at Cron, obviously, and in Nairobi. He won at Cron, didn't he? Nairobi, he was right up there, Johannesburg. So Munich isn't as high as them, but 500 meters above sea level. And he got it done. And he beat Joost Luiten, as you mentioned. Dave, were you on Joost? Because I know he's one of you guys. His website, you're his big blog reader. Were you on him?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his website. I tune in every week because I don't know why more golfers don't do this. I said this last time that they don't have to write War and Peace, but just a few lines on how they're playing and other little things on and off the course. And he's one that every week, without fail, he'll fill you in on how he played and how he's looking forward to next week. So I do tend to back him because he always seems to be around sort of 35-1, 40-1 kind of prices. So he's never, you know, the big favourite. So I always think he's a bit of value. But I forgot to back him in Germany. So that sort of nasty little streak in me thought, oh, I don't want him to win. But I did feel it a little bit for him because, I mean, he threw it away, didn't he? Missed that short putt on 17 for par. And then his drive on 18, he kind of went for it, but it sort of landed in sort of an area where he couldn't get to the green in two. And then he had a decent effort from just off the green, didn't he, to make a playoff. But yeah, if you go back onto his website now, you can get his exact feelings on that he threw that one away. So maybe this week, and I will back him. I'll have a little side bet, not an official bet, but I will have a side bet on you slouting this week.
Nice. Okay. To bounce back. Once you've done listening to the podcast, you can jump on that blog. And then the other side of the Atlantic, Tom Jacobs, you're sort of celebrating. You got some returns as well.
Yeah, celebrating, but you've never been so unhappy for a 400-1 shot to place. I just thought Ches Reavy was really bad on Sunday, and it took him until, what, the 15th hole, 14th hole to make his first birdie of the day. You don't really expect that from someone that, I know he's not like a prolific winner, but he's done it three or four times on the PGA Tour, and Keegan Bradley was begging for someone to give him a challenge. In the end, he tried to throw it away himself, didn't. Look, King Bradley's never, well, until this week, not converted a 54-hole lead. So the opportunity was there. And if Ches Reavy had just gone even under par on the day, he'd have been right in contention. So bittersweet feeling, because it was a great, you know, great effort, and one that, you know, I was really happy with, but one where I thought it could be very easily better.
Well, good you're bringing great form into this week. That's clearly how we're going to look at it.
That's it. Exactly that. Let's look positive.
Exactly right. But yeah, there were two great events in Germany and then at the Travelers. And this week we have another bumper week of golf on both sides of the pond. The PGA Tour has moved to Detroit for the Rocket Mortgage Classic, and the DP World Tour arrives back in the UK at the Belfry once again for the Betfred British Masters, hosted by the legend and six-time major champion Sir Nick Faldo. The Belfry is one of the most iconic venues in the UK, having hosted the Ryder Cup on four occasions, and this week's Betfred British Masters is the 20th DP World Tour event to be played over at the famous Brabazon course. It's a par 72 that plays around 7,300 yards on the card, and it gave us a dramatic finale last year when, after a stuttering round, the Dane Thorbjørn Olesen finished in incredible fashion, holding a 30-foot putt for eagle on the 17th, and then following it up with a 36-foot putt for a winning birdie to pip Swede Sebastian Soderberg by one. Danny Willett hands over the hosting duties to Sir Nick Faldo this week, who was part of three European Ryder Cup teams here, including the famous victory in 1985, sealed on the 18th green by Sam Torrance, and when Seve led the team in spraying champagne from the roof of the clubhouse, and there's iconic scenes. As a special addition to this week's pod, Kit managed to catch up with Sir Nick Faldo to get the inside track on his role this week and this special venue.
Okay, we've got a very special first here on the tips, a first special guest, and it doesn't get much more special than Sir Nick Faldo. Nick, thank you so much for joining us. I'll start off with, how proud are you to be hosting this week's Betfred British Masters here at the Belfry?
Yeah, this is very cool for me. You know, it's something we talked about with Keith Pelly, wow, about 5 or 6 years ago, and finally put it all together. So, yeah, it's great honour to be hosting this week. Got all sorts of different duties to my normal day. So we'll see how it goes.
It's a venue that obviously holds many special memories for you. Is there one that stands out in particular?
Well, I had a good fun time with my partners. You know, this is when I started with Woozy. That's not true, because Wizzy and I did 87 first, and then we came in 89. That's right. So, but that is 1989 first, not 18. So, 89. So, Wizzy was a fun partner, and we had some tough matches, and then I played with Monty for the next one. Was that the 93 one or something? So that again was a great fun time. You know, the golf was always so good. I think what I just love and miss was it's true competition, isn't it? It's just you and your partner going to play for a point. There's not even a pound on it. You know, it's you're playing for a point, and you get so hyped up and so get in the intense. It's fun playing under that kind of intensity. That's what I think I really loved and I miss now. That's when you've really got to pull off a great shot, literally as many times as you can, it's really makes it, you know, a challenge and fun and enjoyable.
Well, there's one hole on the course especially that really challenges you to pull off a great shot. That's obviously the iconic 10th. What was your strategy for playing that one in competition?
You know, in our day, you know, when you it was a tough shot. It was a I think Seve was went with a 3-wood or something. it was a tricky shot. It wasn't always a percentage. It's a skinny green. And, you know, I think we had a go at it in four ball. I think they set it up that way. We probably played one safe and one wimp for it just to stay in the hole. But I can't honestly remember how I really got on with it. I certainly didn't hit a three wood in there to 4 feet and hole the putt. Don't remember anything like that. Not sure. I remember Monty going about 50 yards over the green. Oh, I remember that one once somewhere. We lost him for a while. I think we should probably struggle. Let's just say officially we struggled at the 10th. You know.
Well, we all know about the match play pedigree of the Brabazon course. What do you think makes it a really good stroke play test?
Probably because it's a strategy. You know, I think these guys hit it so far now, and you've got a lot of holes, a lot of dog legs. And obviously, the tree, I mean, since I really played here, you know, the trees have obviously quadrupled in size. So you've got to be careful about running out. You know, that's probably more the problem for these players now. And there's a couple of tight tee shots that, you know, you've got to stand up and shape it, which is probably be tough when you look at the prevailing wind coming basically towards the clubhouse across the golf course. So that can make it tricky as well. You know, you've got to shape the ball probably against the wind, but you've got the hazard on that side as well. So you're working it towards the hazard. If you do it really well, I think you can thread it around here. You can score really well. But if you lose a few on the wind, on the wrong angle of the hole, then you lose your confidence quickly.
You're involved in the course setup this week. How have you influenced how it's going to play?
Well, I think first time round for me, it's, you know, I came up here in March when it was freezing. It was six layers freezing. I had everything on. Raided the pro shop for extra puffer jacket. So that was tough to visualize that, to be honest. And then I heard that we had a quick drought for 5 minutes here in Britain. So that burnt the grass out. So they've adjusted. So I think I'm going to just go with the flow for year one and see how it plays throughout the week. And then I'd like to be more involved in what we do with it over the next years, whether it means, you know, hopefully maybe creating some different looks, new bunkers, remove a few trees, move a few trees, who knows what. I'd like to be involved to make it a good test for the guys.
What areas and facets of the game do you think the eventual winner this week is going to have had to do particularly well?
Yeah, I mean, you have, as I was trying to describe, you have to kind of, we've got a natural slope to the golf course, and if you've got that wind as well, so there's a lot of holes which where are going left to right and on a left to right wind, and so you've got to work out. You may need maybe somebody who's got a little bit of local knowledge on that, but you've got to better work the golf ball into those areas. And I'd be interested to see if they can get the greens firm, so there's a little bit of a bounce in the greens, which is always adds a bit more rather than just plugging wherever you hit it. So I think that's really it. And you have to get the good angle. Few sneaky corners. That's kind of what I remember from my day. It was, you know, it was not necessary bomb it down there because you just don't get a good angle. I remember laying back a few times to be a little smarter and try and work the ball in there a little closer. So it's not necessary bombing out there. I think you've got to think your way and play a little bit of strategy here and there.
It's played tough the last couple of years when the Betfred British Masters has been there. Not seen loads of scores under par. What sort of score do you think will get the job done this week?
I don't know. I think the weather's quite decent, isn't it? I think in this part of the world, I mean, if it's just raining once every day, is that all right? Is that kind of normal?
It's been beautiful.
I don't know. I can't guess. I've just jetted in from Aberdeen. So I don't even know anything about what's going on.
The weather's been better here than Aberdeen, I'm sure. Have you been keeping your eye on the DP World Tour this season and what's been going on? And if so, who's been impressing you?
Well, I have. Obviously, being a Ryder Cup year, you're looking at the top end, because there's a lot of talk about the Ryder Cup. And, you know, I was doing a piece the other day, and I think we're in good shape. I think our backbone is really impressive, isn't it? The strength of our backbone. Look at it. You've got Rory and Rahm and Fitzpatrick and Hatton. And then we got Fleetwood. Who else am I missing?
Victor, Mr. Hovland.
Victor. Yeah, Mr. Victor, of course. So there's your half a dozen. Mm. That is a... You'd stack those six up against any six in the world, wouldn't you? Absolutely. So I think we need just a couple more. Wow, if you get to eight, if you can get your backbone to eight out of the 12, I think we'll look... I think things have just suddenly just flipped around a little bit. It's going to be epic. It's going to be a great Ryder Cup.
One name you just haven't mentioned there, Justin Rose, who's playing in this tournament this week.
You're right, absolutely. Rose is kind of, I guess he's just outside it, but he's one in America. My goodness. So, yeah, he was going to be on there. So there's seven. I think it's very, for a captain, if he knows he's got eight, really playing well, there's all your matches, your four balls and fours. That's what we did way back in the day. That was Tony Jacklin's strategy. He says, if I've got eight guys, I'm sorry, I'm going to wear you out. And it was that we, that's how we only had the depth of really eight. So we did all the heavy lifting. And if anybody tired or you thought they were playing great, but generally it was the big eight did most of the work for the first couple of days, you know.
Great stuff. So, Nick, it's been brilliant to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on and giving us your time and what is a very, very busy week for you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
What a fantastic chat with one of the legends of the game there, Kit. What did you make of your time with Sir Nick?
Yeah, he obviously knows the course well, doesn't he? Got some nice memories of the place. And I thought it was interesting what he said, certainly about the type of player that's going to win and the type of test that it sort of offers the players. And it is very much a thinking man's golf course. They've added yardage to the Brabazon course in recent years. This is our sort of third visit back there since the Bretford British Masters has been brought back, and it's sort of found its home again now at the Belfry. But there was lots of mention of sort of wind and cambers of fairways and turns of doglegs all sort of countering one another, and places where you're tempted to take things on a little bit too much than you should, perhaps try and go at a dogleg or be too aggressive and run out of fairway. And I think that's reflected in the kind of what I thought, looking at it as a venue and people that have done there well, that it is a thinking player's golf course. And to hear, obviously, someone like Sir Nick Faldo describe it in such a way obviously backs that up 100%. He knows the place like the back of his hand, and also really excited for the future. You know, he sounds like he's got plans for what he wants to do with the place, talking about, well, I might take some bunkers away, add some in here, do something with the trees. So fingers crossed it gets the British Masters, being such an incredible event that it is, gets its home at the Belfry, an iconic British venue for years to come. And Sir Nick Faldo can be right there tweaking the course a la the likes of Jack Nicklaus when we go to his place in the States and Arnold Palmer used to do, and we can almost get that feel to the tournament. I think that would be really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Making it his own. And the tweaks are very exciting, potentially not for Dave and Tom, who like to see all that and then they change it every year and don't know what to go off. And with that, Dave, it is such an iconic place with plenty of history, and there have been changes and length added. How have you approached your analysis this week, looking at the Belfry?
Yeah, so I've played it a couple of times, actually. Well, when I say a couple of times, I played it one and a half times. I played it once to review it, I think, and then I played on a golf day there with a member of the Leicester Tigers rugby team. But it got rained off halfway through, so we all went back to the clubhouse, and Dougie Donnelly did a brilliant quiz and impromptu comedy set. It was almost better than the golf. But from playing there, I do remember that it was tough on the greens and tough around the greens. I remember a number of times I was thinking, oh, I'm on for par here, and I'd three putt, or I'm near the green in two, and I couldn't get up and down. Like on the famous iconic 10th, obviously, I think I went for the green, topped it about 100 yards, but then got on in two and thought, I'll par it this way, but then I three putted again. So I did take note that around the greens and on the greens are important. And I think if you do look back at the form there, so For example, Olofsson last year, he was ninth. He was second in putting. So that was crucial for him. Also, approach play, I think, is important. I think Nick Faldo will enjoy the fact that you need to have a good test of your irons. And then putting again, when Richard Bland won, I think the top two putters that week, Dave Coupland and Adrian Maronk, were the top two putters. And again, approach play was important. So I've looked at approach play and around the greens and on the greens. And I think one thing I did sort of thought was quite interesting that Cynic said was that he's not done too much with it this time and he'll do more of it in the future. So maybe past results for the past couple of years will stand up a little bit more than they might have. If Cynic had come in and done a raft of changes ahead of this week, I think I might have been scratching my head a little bit more. But I think from what he said, he hasn't overdone anything just yet. He's going to have a look this time and then tinker later on. So I think, yeah, recent form just will stand up quite well.
Okay, good stuff. So, yeah, course form we'll look at there. And don't worry about topping it. We saw Stephanie Meadow do it. So even the best obviously have it in their locker. So that's a bit of the course. Tom, you always strike me as a man who looks to recent form as a bit of a good marker, and that's helped you out this year. So is there anyone particularly who's caught your eye in recent week without giving away your tips?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think you know, without giving away the two picks, there is a raft of players at the top of the market. You've got your Justin Rose and your Minwoo Lees that are coming off really impressive performances over in America. And there's certainly players playing for Ryder Cup spaces in terms of, you know, Victor Perez and Yannick Paul, who maybe have slightly lost their form in recent weeks and just need to have a big performance. And although it isn't, you know, the Ryder Cup venue this year, I think just impressing on a Ryder Cup or past Ryder Cup venue could kind of lodge in people like Luke Donald's mind. So I think there is probably a keenness to do well here. And it was music to my ears when Cynic said yesterday that he hadn't changed too much because we had some form to go by. I think course form here is actually more important than maybe some other events that we've been at recently. And, you know, the word that I took away from most of his interview with Kit was strategy. Like, he talked about it an awful lot. And when you look at the people that have won, it makes perfect sense. I mean, Richard Bland and Thurman Olofsson are people that will win from, you know, having a better golf mind than some other players. And unfortunately, one of my picks later on that I'll come to was the person that kind of lost out to that last year. But yeah, I think ultimately it's going to reward the best players and tee to green overall. And like Dave said, it's very much your approach play here. And so Nick spoke about how he wants kind of the greens to be baked out this time around. And certainly we've had the weather for that in recent weeks, so that could be a potential opportunity here. So, yeah, I think ultimately it's going to just really test all facets of the game. I've gone with a more balanced approach and certainly a bit more experience on my hands this time around. People that, you know, we know the game, know the course.
Okay, great. And a lovely segue from you there. Thank you. To look at the top of the market, because some interesting prices, as you mentioned, Justin Rose around 10 to 1 mark, Minwoo Lee 12 to 1, Adrian Maronk, as always, 14s. That's a copy and paste job. And Jordan Smith at 18s. And then there is a big jump, Alex Bjorkstil available at 30 to 1. So obviously some big names coming back as move to the market. And everyone wants to win at the iconic venue and get that on their resume. So let's get into it and find out who you are tipping. So first up, I'm going to stay with you, Tom, actually. Who have you got as your outright and main pick this week at the Betfred British Masters?
Yeah, so it will be Adrian Maronk for me at 14 to 1. I know the price is kind of consistent, but I think it warrants it, right? Like, his there's a real base level to Adrian Maronk's performances right now. There seems to be that when he returns to the DP World Tour, obviously he's crossing over to the PGA Tour quite often at the moment, there is just like a level of form that he kind of sticks to, and we know that he's pretty reliable. I mean, since last year in July, he's won three times on the tour, and this season it's been first, 10th, 4th, 21st and 1st in his DP World Tour start. So he's certainly, you know, the kind of the man of the hour. And I think there is three players here that kind of separate themselves in Rose, Minwoo Lee and Maronk. And I just thought the Maronk was the better value of the three. For the first time, potentially this season, I've kind of looked at Justin Rose's price and gone, no, that's too short. Anyone that's been kind of listening so far will know I've been backing him. But ultimately, I think for me, you mentioned the top Maronk there was, what Dave said, that he'd led the putting or been there or thereabouts with the putting in 2021, and he finished third place that year. I think now for someone like Maronk, who ultimately is probably the best of the rest on the DP World Tour when you start looking at the kind of upper echelons of the Ryder Cup teams, you know, he's leads the tour in strokes gained total, off the tee and tee to green, and he's third in greens and regulation. So his, you know, his all-round game is brilliant. 13th in strokes gained approach, 16th strokes gained around the green. I don't think you can get a more well-rounded player than Adrian Meronk right now. And I understand it's 14-1 and people want slightly bigger quite often. But to me, I literally don't know what price you can make him. He's certainly the best player, I think, in terms of course and current form.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, he's 40-1 available. That's 3 points each way from you. And he's got great form here, as you say, third in 2021. And that was a 65-69 weekend after a slow start. So good memories for the Pole who leads everything pretty much. And he's had one more week settled in Europe. I know a lot of tipsters don't like the travel side of things. So that could definitely be a factor. Dave, who are you throwing in to challenge Meronk as your outright pick?
Yeah, I do like Tom's pick of Meronk, I must say. If you strip out American form, Meronk's DP World Tour form is sort of Scotty Scheffler-esque, isn't it? It's just like there every week. So, yeah, it's a good pick, that one. I'm going for Alexander Bjork. I think I put him up the first podcast I did, and he got some each-way returns, which was good. So current form, absolutely brilliant. 9th, 6th, 29th, 4th, 4th, his last five events. I just love his numbers for this test in terms of what I think you need to do. So that's good approach play, good putting, good around the green. So if you look at Alex Bjork's form in those categories, he's 7th in putting this season. And I think he's been in the top 16 for putting in his last five events. So every week that putter is good. He's 9th in approach this season, which I really like. And then if you look at the short game, whichever metric you use, he's 21st around the green, 3rd in scrambling. So all facets of his game are good. The only question mark is his course form, and others have got more attractive course form. Bjork's got 30th and missed cut, which, you know, on the face of it doesn't look great. But I had a little bit of a deeper dive into it, and two of his last four rounds there are 67 and 69, so there's nothing particularly wrong with it. He can score on this course, and I don't think he's ever been in such consistent form. Then you look at some of his form in England as well. I don't know if you remember in this event at Walton Heath when he was runner-up. That was 5 years ago. He's come a third at the Forest of Arden. So he's played plenty of good golf in England. So, yeah, I just thought the price was good as well. Obviously, Rose and Minwuli, and to an extent, Meronk helped make that price. And they're all dangers. Although with Rose, got a slight thing with Rose. I think he'll play, when you look at his form when he comes back to England, it's always good, but it's sort of like fifth and fourth and ninth. He's never quite justifying backing him at, you know, for the win at a short price. So I think Rose can be beaten. And I just thought around 30-1, 28s, 33s, that Bjork was a really good, nice each-way price.
Yeah, great. There was 2.5 points each way there. And as you say, not course form, but current form. And, yeah, I think in his last seven starts, he's not been outside the top 30 with four top 10s. You tipped him in Sudal, where he got tied for four. And Kit, to you here, he's a name that pops up seemingly every week from a tipster somewhere. Is he a case, do you think, where if he gets one done, the floodgates somewhat could open? Like Tristan Lawrence, there could be, you know, multiple on the horizon for him.
There's potential for that because the floor, if you like, you look at players and their floor of their performance, the ceiling of their performance, his floor has risen massively this year. That's where that consistency has come from. He's been so good that I've exhausted all of my picks with him in the fantasy game already with DP World Tour. So I can't go to the well with him anymore. But I did want to add in as well that obviously all of those stats that you mentioned about Bjork are absolutely brilliant. And putting overall, he's an excellent, excellent putter. But one of the areas in particular where he stands out, he probably holds more mid-range putts than anyone else I've seen over the last year to 18 months on the DP World Tour. And with what Faldo said about the course is going to be firmer, they want the greens a bit firmer, it's being played 6 weeks or so later this year, this event, than it was at the Belfry the last couple of times we've been there. So it is, and with the obviously dry weather we've had, it's undoubtedly firmer and faster than it's been. It's going to be harder to get the ball closer onto what Dave has already told us from first-hand experience are tricky and in places slopey greens, and it's hard to two-putt in some instances. So not only just overall he's an excellent putter and playing really, really well, but I think his mid-range putting separates him significantly, and there's going to be a lot more of that this week than perhaps some other weeks.
Yeah, great insight. And if the great Dave Tindall is struggling getting it near the pins, then what, you know, Alex Bjork, you know, got some learning to do. Absolutely. Tom Jacobs, can you give us your second and final outright pick for the Betfair British Masters, please?
Absolutely, yeah. So for me, it's Richie Ramsey. And I spoke earlier about the kind of heartbreak on 18 last year when he puts it into the water, and you know, Thorbjørn Olesen finishes eagle birdie to knock Soderberg out in the clubhouse lead, and then take Ramsey out of the mix as well. And you know, we talked about that putting there, and it just shows. I mean, Sir Nick talked about it, how important putting is going to be over the some of the final four or five holes. And unfortunately, I think I actually quite liked what Ramsey did. He kind of, you know, he was going for it. He felt pretty confident. He just mishit a shot. Like, it happens. He was pretty thoughtful on it. And Dave talked about Joost Lauwersen's website. Richie Ramsey is probably one of the better players to follow on Twitter. He's very thoughtful about his game. And I just love when he's kind of finding form. And that's what he's doing right now. He finished seventh at Sadau, where he was fifth going into Sunday. He was only 39th at the KLM, but again, he was eighth at halfway. And then he finished fifth at the Scandinavian Mixed last time as well. So you're looking at the last 2 years, of course, he's been 43rd and third. But even when he was 43rd, he was 16th at the halfway mark as well. So really and truly, he's been right in the mix both times that he's been here. He is that kind of veteran presence that no matter what happens with the conditions, they should suit him. And when it's been, I think it's like 10 under and a 13 under it's been so far, and the potential for it to be, you know, higher scoring this week because of the baking out and everything like that. I typically think that that will suit Richie Ramsey, and he does play very well when he comes back to the UK. So pretty confident on Richie Ramsey as a veteran presence and someone who I still think has got a win in the tank. I remember speaking to him maybe a couple of years ago now, and there was kind of an inkling in his head that it might not be long before he sort of hangs his clubs up. And then he's had a bit of a revitalization in his career again, and all of a sudden he looks hungry again. So I really do like what Richie Ramsey's done throughout his career, and come and see his classical tests. I think he relishes them.
Yeah, brilliant. He's 50-1, still Richie Ramsey available for 1.5 points each way. And as you say, third last year, and that was after opening 74. And the score point was interesting. I looked at his wins, and apart from Kron, they're all around that 13, 14 under mark, which is his rules. And Kron, second place, was 13 under. He won by four. So interesting. Kit, one thing for you, actually, out of interest, like, because he's older statesman, let's put it, he's more experienced. Do you think he's picking and choosing a bit more the event he likes and to pick courses that really suit him? Because we're not seeing him as much as we have historically, potentially.
Yeah, I think so. And he's absolutely right to do that. What's the point if you're Richie Ramsey in turning up at a course that's just under 8,000 yards and, like, you know, you absolutely have to bomb it. It's you've got to know what suits your game and pick your battles. I even remember Graham McDowell saying it a few years ago now, but, you know, it was when he was still sort of competitive, but the back end, he was looking at the PGA Tour calendar and going, look, there are probably six or eight events I can realistically challenge at because I'm not as long these days and the courses are getting longer. And I think, you know, players have to be more aware of that. If you are someone that isn't one of the longer hitters on tour, or if, as you get a little bit older, that distance does start to drop off a bit. And obviously, the longer you're out there, the younger the lads coming through are, and the longer they're hitting it. We're seeing that trend, obviously. So I think you have to know what type of course you're likely to win at. You've obviously identified it. It's not somewhere where people are going gangbusters and getting to 18, 20, 25 under par. And it's not somewhere that's absolutely monstrous off the tee. If Richie Ramsey gets given a classic style golf course that tests all the way through the bag, he can contend with the best of them. The form that Tom has explained has shown that. He's hungry. And I think somewhere like the Belfry is right in his wheelhouse and a perfect fit.
Yeah, absolutely. He is so accurate off the tee. I remember we used him as our test dummy for many shoots, 1 yard fairway, etc., because he was just leading and would never miss. So there you go, Richie Ramsey. And Dave, who's your second outright pick this week?
Yeah, I'm going to go for another Scott, Callum Hill. I do like Richie Ramsey. This can't be right. I think I once went up the north face of the Eiger with Richie Ramsey on a trip to Switzerland. Is that right? Have I got that right?
I mean, only you can answer that one, Dave, I'm afraid.
Thing I would definitely remember. I feel like, yeah, I'd know if I'd been up a mountain with Richie.
Sally, he's not on the call. He can't tell us if it's true or not.
It's going to get embellished, isn't it? It'll be Mount Everest in for about five years. But, yeah, kept me and Richie Ramsey up K2. Callum Hill... I do like Richie Ramsey for this as well, I must say. But Callum Hill, quite a simple argument. I mean, the course form, he's eighth and ninth on his last two visits. He didn't play last year, but eighth in the British Masters 2021 and then ninth in that UK Championship that was held in 2022. Top five strokes gained tee to green both those events, so he's got all the course form. And for Scott, he clearly loves coming south of the border because his last four starts in England, he's got those two top tens. He also won the Kazoo Classic at the London Club. So last four times in England. He's got a first, an eighth, and a ninth. So really likes playing in this part of the world. Current form, he was 10th at the BMW International Open, which is really good. And I liked his numbers as well there. I think they were his best approach numbers since he played well in Japan when he was third quite a few months ago. And then his putting as well, which can be a little bit of an Achilles heel. He was top 10 for that. And so 15th for strokes gained putting. And again, that was his best in that category for quite a long time. So I think he's coming really into good form again. 10th in scrambling also at that event. And if you look at his record, he's got a DP World Tour win and he's got two Challenge Tour wins. They all came in July and August. So I quite like this thing where a golfer tends to peak at a certain time of year. And I think we're in peak Callum Hill territory now. So yeah, I thought he was a good bet.
So he's one of the Scots who love the sunshine. Okay, mark that down. The rare entity in England. I looked at that. I saw the kazoo win. I went on a kazoo tangent, seeing that he won that classic. Richie Ramsey also won that, but it turns out it was at Hillside, not at London, different course. But the year Callum Hill won, just behind him, a shot behind, I think, was Richard Bland, who obviously has a win here as well. So could be something there. I saw he's had some injury going on. Kit, is that right? I saw some nerve hypersensitivity, I think he said, that he's sort of coming back from, and not playing every week, but is clearly a very talented player.
Yeah, he has struggled a bit just to get starts under his belt. He had a couple of issues last year and it sort of took him out of the game for longer than he thought. It just took him ages to recover from some really innocuous sort of things like bites and things like that. So he's had a little bit of a strange checkered health related past over the last 18 months, but he is a player that I think once he gets more starts under his belt, we are going to see the true Callum Hill, and we're seeing glimpses of it. He's a very talented player, just likes to do his own thing. Interestingly, I was in Ireland with the Irish Legends last week and I was chatting to Paul and Craig Laurie, Craig being Paul's son, who kind of help out with Callum's management, and I was just asking about him, and they were just saying, no, he's the type of guy, he just wants to be on his own. Like, they don't really send anyone over to look after him. He does his own thing. He looks after himself. And maybe that's why that benefit of being in England and the great form we've seen there is because he likes looking after himself anyway. And if he's in more familiar surroundings, everything just becomes a little bit easier as well. So that sort of, I'm not going to say home comforts because I'm going to get a tirade of abuse from Scottish people if I do, but the comfort of being on the British Isles, the kind of culture and things that he's used to, perhaps helps feed into that, knowing that he is someone that just likes to look after himself and do his own thing. And yeah, hopefully now he just gets a run of fitness, because I think he's a very talented player if he gets the opportunity to tee it up week in, week out and gather a bit of momentum.
Absolutely, he is. And you won't see 50-1, which he currently is at the moment, for too much longer. That was another point each way for the Scot there, Callum Hill. And just quickly, gents, we've got a special and you've both gone for the same event here. So let's come to you first, Tom, with your top 20 for, I think you've chosen for this week.
Yeah, so just before I move over to the top 20, I just want to say that I think there's definitely a little bit of motivation factor for Scottish players this week as well. I think I read a tweet that there's not a Scottish player inside the top 100 now. I think Bob McIntyre has suddenly slipped out of there. So maybe a little bit of motivation there. And I think Callum Hill is one of those ones that certainly going to improve. I still think he's pretty green. Like, I was looking at this the other day, like the DP World Tour put out a great tweet about Daniel Hillier and the fact that he was only playing kind of like his 28th event. And I think we hear about these players. We've heard about Callum Hill for a number of years now, but because of those injury problems, he's had limited starts. So I think there's definitely some things to come for Callum Hill. So I do like that selection there. But back to my top 20 pick, and it's Justin Walters, who I don't think anyone would deny a DP World Tour victory. And certainly kind of fits that Richie Ramsey mould. He's someone that just plays really well when he comes back to the UK. I've seen him a couple of times play well at Wentworth, not necessarily having the greatest finishes there, but certainly putting some rounds together. And it was at the Belfry where he's played his best golf. So he was second to Rasmus Højgaard at the UK Championship. He was actually, you know, the leader for the first three rounds and lost out there in a playoff. And then, you know, Rasmus had to shoot a 65 to even get into that playoff and beat him. So a little bit heartbreaking for Walters, who you could tell was certainly nervous on the final round. But he came back here and finished third again last year. So to me, this is certainly the type of course that suits him. Kit's obviously mentioned about having, you know, multiple starts at these types of courses and circling places on the calendar. I think it's great for him. So just looking at his form, like, I've gone a little bit more conservative in the top 20 market just because he seems to be having these kind of run of events without necessarily getting the top finishes. So he's made six straight cuts and he was very unlucky not to make it 80. He missed the cut slightly in Japan. But he was inside the top 20 of the Italian Open. He was 25th going into the final round and then finished 40th, which is a little bit of a shame. But then he was 39th for the European Open. Again, he was better placed. He was 12th going into round four. And then he was also 21st at Scandinavian Mixed and 26th last week, where he was short of the top 20 by one place. So he's certainly right in the mix. And I just think coming back to a course that he loves and a type of setup that he loves, Waters can prosper here.
That's great. Yeah. So he is 15-4 now. And there was 2 points from you, Tom, there on Justin Waters. And yeah, when I saw Special Market, I just thought first round leader. I swear his name is always up there in the UK. And Kit, you've just got a point on Justin.
Yeah, just to add to how impressive that third place finish was for Walters last year, I had a good chat to him on the Tuesday at the Belfry last year. He could literally barely walk, like he'd done his Achilles or something. He was really, really struggling. He wasn't sure if he'd even be able to tee it up. When I saw him on Tuesday, I thought there is no way he is walking 18 holes round this course once, let alone in four rounds. It was unbelievable the effort to get round that course, and let alone to do it scoring like he did to finish third. So that just shows the level of comfort and desire, because I don't think if it was a course he loved as much as the Belfry, he wouldn't have even been teeing it up that injured. But he did, and was still able to finish third on one leg, basically.
Yeah, wow. Very impressive. I mean, we've already got nappy factor. If we have to add Achilles factor, there is...
Beware the injured golfer. Beware the injured golfer.
Absolutely. Dave, who are you throwing in as your top 20 at the Belfry?
Yeah, I'm going Scottish again. Conor Syme. It just occurred to me, so we've got a lot of Scottish players, and I think, I wonder why are we doing this? And then I remember I did go to the 2002 Ryder Cup when, I don't know if you remember that one. Monty was absolutely awesome. He got 4.5 points out of five. I followed him around for most of the week, and maybe that's in my head a little bit, our Scottish memories there. So Conor Syme, but even without the sort of Monty link, I think he's got good credentials here. Really good on Parkman track. So he was third here last year. He's got good form at Diamond in Austria. Got top 10 at Valderrama, played well at Celtic Manor. So he does like this style of golf, Conor Syme. And in current form, he was 14th and 10th in the two German events. Putted really, really well in both. So I think that bodes well. To be honest, I was almost thinking I could put him in the outright market, but I think top 20 is reasonable. If you look at his last four starts in England, he's got a third and a 19th. So, you know, that 19th would have just scraped in for the top 20. So I'll put him up as a top 20, but if anybody wants to back him in the outright as well, I think he could go well in that as well. But we'll go top 20 for Conor Syme and cheer on the Scots.
Absolutely. A triumvirate of Scots there. He's 7-2 for that market. And you do like him because it's 3 points given there for Conor's top 20 from you. And looking there, as you mentioned, he came third here last year alongside Justin Walters and Richard Ramsey. So there's a real theme with the picks this week. There's a good overview from the Belfry. And before we move on to the Rocket Mortgage Classic, it's time for everyone's favourite game that Kit normally wins, but we're going to try and make sure he doesn't this week, of Who Am I? Yeah, that's right. Who am I? Okay, so how it works is, you probably know by now, but I'll give you a little fact, figure, stat. You can put your hand up, shout out whatever you want, a name you think it might be. If you don't know, that's fine. And I will go on to the next one. There'll be 5 in total. See how quickly you can get it. Kit still holds the record with 1. Ben Coley still holds the record for never getting it, essentially. Which he takes very well. So we'll start off with, I've gone niche here. I captained the international team against the US in the 2013 US Kids Golf World Cup.
Kids
golf, 2013. Yeah. So they're going to be about, 16-ish, 15, 16. So they're now probably mid-20s, what are we thinking? International.
You can throw a name out if you want to, if not, we'll move on.
I'm going to chuck, it's too obvious, but I'm going to say Minwoo Lee.
It's not Minwoo Lee. Okay, we'll move on. We're staying. I won the Junior Players Championship at Sawgrass in 2019. Oh, I love watching the faces. Just, yeah, great.
International.
And they're in the field this week at the Belfry.
They are. They're my pick. Who Am I is essentially my pick. I'm glad this is going.
Sean Crocker.
Good guess, but no, it is not Sean Crocker. Okay. I like that Dave and Tom just biding their time to get it bang on.
Yeah,
no,
I'm chucking names out there and they're just simmering in the background.
I like it. Okay. Number three, it gets a bit easier now. I was runner-up at the Alfred Dunhill Championships in 2020 behind Christian Bezuidenhout. Oh. Everyone's thinking of their old bet slips, aren't they? Who did I have that week?
Who was, yeah, which South African?
And he's in the field this week.
Tom's staying very quiet. He's going to sneak it. This is, I can sense this. This is from the pack. Yeah, Stephen Bradbury in the Winter Olympics. Okay, I've had three top tens this year. One in South Africa early on, then Mauritius and Kenya.
Oh, dear.
It is tricky. You're right on the right. Young South African.
Xander Lombard?
Not Xander Lombard, no.
Oh,
Xander
Lombard. Word.
Contentious.
Is it someone that requires you to really commit to the South African pronunciation of their surname?
Not really commit. Not like you.
Because if it's the person I'm thinking of, I like to really commit to it.
Who are we throwing out here?
Dion Hermes Hayes.
It's not, no.
Damn it. Any opportunity to say his name, though?
Dave Bermester to you and me.
I think it's Wilco Nijnaber.
It is not. No. This is.
Oh, my word. How many South Africans are playing this week?
The last. Yeah. Let me just hear he's playing. Can you imagine?
We can't think much of his chances, can we? We've gone through all these names. Yeah.
The last one was he played, his idol is Louis Oosthuizen, but his nickname is The Shaper. That should hopefully help.
Oh, there you go.
The Shaper.
Yeah.
I thought he would be too young to have played in that junior thing in 2013.
Yeah, I think
10 years ago, he's still young. How young would he have been then?
13, I think the US kids was, yeah, he was around then. Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly right. So that's who it is. Yeah, I saw the nickname was Shaper. I was like, well, no, you can make sense. But
that's an incredibly unimaginative nickname.
Isn't it?
That nickname is just his surname.
Who cares if he can move it? Just without the C. Who cares if he can move it both ways? Come up with a new one. Yeah.
Replay the tapes. And I think I said it first by like 5 minutes.
Yeah. I think he did, yeah.
We'll give it. Yeah, they're paying out the bookies. Dave Tindall wins that one. Well done.
Hello. Really.
Another great game of Who Am I there. And remember, we do have a game, as mentioned, the fancy game. Kit's playing. He's run out of selections for some people already.
For Bjork, I've burned him already. Terrible.
He's already burned. But do remember, you can go on the website and join there and pick six players, go against mates. And if you don't want to bet, it's a great way to get involved and pick some of your favourite players and watch them throughout the week progress through the field. Time now to have a look at the PGA Tour event, the Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit. Yes, over to the PGA Tour now. We go to Motor City for the Rocket Mortgage Classic at Detroit Golf Club. Tony Finau defends his title here after winning by 5 shots last year over Cameron Young and Patrick Cantlay. In the 4 editions of this event so far, it has been a very low-scoring affair with 3 of those 4 winners shooting 23 under par or lower. So Kit, firstly to you, it's obviously a fairly new golf course with 2019 being the first sort of staging of it. So tougher to go on data there, but the bombers seem to have gone pretty well here. We got you, Tony Finau hits it a mile. Bryson, especially back then, was really giving it some. And Cam Davis, the very talented young Aussie. Do you expect to see much of the same this year? Or is there more to this course than just bomb and gouge, essentially, or bomb and wedge?
Largely, I do expect it to favour the longer hitters, but that grabs kind of the headlines. It is a bomber's paradise to an extent, but essentially what it is a birdie fest. And we've gone from one birdie fest last week to another this week, and that means getting the ball in the hole. So while you look at it and bombers have won it, obviously you give yourself more chances from shorter, it's the putters who have excelled, because in the 4 editions we've had, no one in the top 10 has lost strokes on the greens the week they finished in the top 10. Most of them have actually picked up a couple of strokes or more. So bombing helps, the actual real story here is you've got to be hot on the greens. You've got to get it in for birdies and eagles because, like you say, winning scores 26 under last year. Cam Davis was that outlier under 23, under at 18, and then DeChambeau 23. And Nate Lashley in the first renewal in 2019 got it round in 25 under par. So I would certainly favour the longer hitters, but if there's one thing I'm looking for that has to be in the arsenal, you have got to be hot on the greens, hot with the flag stick in general, and carrying good form with the putters. I think, you know, you're going to see that again. It's guys that give themselves plenty of opportunities and get it in the hole. You know, someone like Kevin Kisner's got a pretty good record here as well. By no means a bomber, but a great putter. I always seem to bring up Kevin Kisner at random times. I feel like we did it talking about the match play as well, but we'll move on. But I think distance important, putting even more so.
Okay, great. Yeah, and the greens are pretty spicy here at times. They're pretty quick, 12, just over 12, I saw from the good old Ron Kloss on Twitter on the stimp then. And yeah, Nate Lashley, 6-shot win. And some funny, we've had two favourites, or Finau's second favourite, at 11-1 or so. Bryson was 6-1. And then Cam Davis, 125-1. And Nate Lashley, basically, he's off my spreadsheet, 100s to 1, and he won by 6. So, Dave, with this event, out of interest, and PGA Tour in general, do you, obviously, we're looking for birdies, birdie makers. Is this sort of thing you really enjoy watching this as a test of golf, or are you more about the classic higher scoring events?
Yeah, it's kind of, it's a bit event dependent. So I was on Nate Lashley when he won, so maybe I've elevated this one a bit higher in my sort of regard. So I do remember that. And obviously that sowed the seed that you don't have to hit it a million miles to win here. But yeah, I mean, I know Rory McIlroy was obviously talking about last week that TPC River Highlands, it can't sort of cope with sort of modern day equipment. So when you get them back to back, it does seem to just diminish it a little bit, doesn't it? When you get these birdie fests one after the other. If they came, you know, sort of dotted around, but we've got another one this week. And I think you can get frustrated as a punter because you can pick a guy who's playing great tee to green and then he's just not holding the putts. And you think, well, if this was, you know, a fairer test, and you get a bit grumpy that it's just down to putting. But, you know, you've got to go with the trends. And I agree with Kit. Yeah, you've got to make a ton of birdies here. And yeah, you're looking at guys who put well.
Yeah, great. And before we look into who you've picked and the stats they really strive and do well at, Tom, this is obviously a non-designated event, but there are still some really good names at the top of the market. We're looking, Finau's defending. We also have Ricky Fowler, Justin Thomas and Hideki Matsuyama, who are all coming off very good finishes last week. What do you make of some of the form of those big names, particularly Ricky Fowler, who his comeback's taking another turn with he flirted with a 59 on Saturday, and even Justin Thomas for the first time after an 81, was it, I think, at the US, went well as well last week.
Yeah, so I think for me, you know, echo both the points that Kit and Dave made, that it's just a case of making those kind of birdie putts, and I don't really mind how you do it. I mean, Nate Lashley obviously gave us the insight that you can do it without bombing it off the tee, and so are the other people who kind of finished 8th to 10th over the years. But over the last 2 or 3 years, I mean, you've had Bryson with it, as you said, a 6-7-1, Tony Finau 11-1, and even Cam Davis, I think he was like 125-1, but he's amongst the best drivers of the golf ball. So you kind of got a pretty clear statistical model there. And I think actually when you look at people that can hit it far enough, which is kind of what I focused on rather than, you know, total bombers, and the person that's going to make the most putts, I always think of someone like a Ricky Fowler. You know, the way that he's been playing is incredible. He seems to be due a win. I think when we looked at like Jason Day, eventually got his win. I think it was at the Byron Nelson earlier this year. It was kind of rewarded for his form. And it feels a lot like that for Ricky Fowler. I couldn't do it because he was like 14-1 and he hasn't won for an extended period of time. But I do certainly see the credentials for Fowler. So if I was going to pick any one of those kind of leading three or four, it would be him. Because I think there is question marks over Justin Thomas still. Like, is it, you know, a bit of a false dawn? Is it that's what he's, you know, what he's going to be accustomed to for the following few events? And Morikawa, I still think there's a slight concern about the niggling injury with his back. Tony Finau would be the one that you could probably hang your hat on a little bit, but even he hasn't hit the heights that he hit when he was winning 3 or 4 times last season. So he came into this event last year having won the 3M Open a week before and certainly hasn't done that this time around. So I think it's certainly a case of You know, you do have to look at the top of the market because of what Bryce and Tony Finau have done, especially Canlay and Wolf finishing second as well. But I think, yeah, ultimately there is one from the top that I like, and it wasn't the ones that we've kind of mentioned so far.
Oh, there we go. Well, I keep it hidden there. And if we do look at that top of the market, say Finau 14-1, it's quite different from what we're seeing at the Belfry. Fowler is around that same mark. Then there's Morikawa, Homer, Matsuyama, Thomas, all 18-1, really, as is Sung Jae Im and Tom Kim in some places. So it's very congested in the late teens. So with that, let's get into the picks. And Dave, who are you opening up with this week?
Yeah, so I'm going to go with Taylor Moore. For fans of current form, you'll look away now because he's missed his last three cuts, which. A bit unusual for me, I guess, to pick someone like that. But it wasn't that bad, actually. I mean, in the US Open, he missed the cut on the number, shot 71-72. At the Travelers, he shot 71-70. So he's not far off. But clearly, he wanted me to get onto the good stuff. So this is why I do like Taylor Moore. He's 50-1. The price is obviously a big part of this. But as we know, he won the Valspar in March in Florida. Then he's come fourth in the Zurich Pairs event, 11th at Hilton Head. And then he had that good run on the West Coast, some of this on Poana Greens, which we've got this week. So he was top 15 at Pebble, Phoenix and Torrey Pines. So he's a really good player. And what I do really like about him, and this is kind of the angle, I think, for me this week, is his form on Donald Ross courses. It's fantastic. I don't know. We sometimes know that. I wonder if they quite realise, and if they don't, can someone ring him now and tell him, because he's got great form on Donald Rock's course. So he's not played a ton on these tracks, but he was sixth here on his course debut last year. That's obviously the best bit of form you can get. Fifth at the Wyndham at Sedgefield, another Donald Ross. And even in his even on the second tier on the Corn Ferry, he was ninth in the Knoxville Open at Holston Hills. So four events on a Donald Ross track. He's got a fifth, a sixth, and a ninth. The only one he missed out on was, I think, Oak Hill. That was a major. So, you know, that was obviously a bit of a tougher task. But he's 27th in putting this season, which, as we've said, we really want a good putter. So I think that is one of his big strengths. And I think maybe if he's just struggling a bit here and there, you want to get on a course where you can, yeah, it's a little bit easier and you're relying on that putter. He's 28th in the FedEx Cup standing. So I just thought 50-1, if he'd played well in the Travelers last week, he wouldn't be that price. And unlike quite a few of those that we've mentioned, that Tom mentioned at the top of the market, he has a win this season, Taylor Moore. So I just thought the price is... I quite liked him at 50s.
Yeah, absolutely. And the putting stood out to me. He, from inside 10 feet, he's in the top 10 for every metric. So 3 feet, 6 feet, 9 feet, everything they do. So if he gets it close on these mix, aren't they, Poa and Bentgrass, then it could go well. So that was 1.5 points each way. Yeah, 1.5 points each way from Dave there. Tom, who's leading your selection this week on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, before going into my first pick, that mention there of the Knoxville Open from Dave is... So I've got a slightly different event that I've kind of looked at for crossover of form, and I'll come into that with my second pick. But every time I was looking at whether those players have played well in the event that I liked, everyone came up with a Knoxville Open on the Corn Ferry Tour. And there's like Chris Kirk, Ches Reavie, and people like that. It's amazing. Like, I think JJ Spawn has potentially won it or been up there at a Knoxville Open. Steven Yeager has won that and played well here. Like, there is, it's apparently a feeder course, this one, because there is just so much crossover. So if you are someone that follows the Corn Ferry Tour and have looked at Knoxville Open, then definitely look at that one. But my first pick is Hideki Matsuyama of the group at the top. And over the past 15 weeks, he leads the field in both strokes gained approach and strokes gained tee to green. And when you see that from Hideki Matsuyama, I think we have to kind of stand up and take notice, because that is essentially what his game is now. The elephant in the room is that we ask people to make a lot of putts, and Hideki Matsuyama famously either doesn't or gains a bunch. And I'm hoping it's just going to be gains a bunch this time. He's made nine straight cuts since he finished fifth at the Players' Championship, and that's with a niggling injury, a neck injury in that time as well. Four straight top 25 finishes outside of the major starts as well. And I think he did play well at Augusta as well. So I just like his chances in this week of field. He's dropping down in kind of quality this week. He has played decently well here in two of his three starts. I like the fact that he's come here and taken this kind of tournament seriously. And when I think about Dicky Matsuyama, like, he suits these birdie fest types of events. You look at how he's won his events, that certainly, you know, comes to fruition. He's played well in Phoenix, where, you know, you can make a lot of birdies. So for someone that can struggle with a flat stick, he does know how to win these low scoring events. And, you know, it's the easiest way to hang your hat is for someone that's hitting the ball as well as he is. So hopefully just makes a few putts along the way.
Yeah. 2 points each way, 18-1 for Hideki. And we've heard one name from top of the market. Out of interest, Kit, who of those names that I read earlier, 5, 6, 7, have really caught your eye and get your attention when you think of just a bit of a birdie fest?
Well, Finau. I mean, we said it's kind of obvious. Ordinarily, I'd kind of think maybe a Justin Thomas, because I'd love his wedge game and his putting, but yeah, he's not in the form you would like him to be in at the moment. Just as an addition to that, I mean, I think it's not only a big week for Colin Morikawa, but a really big few weeks, because on the form he's in at the moment, he's in danger of maybe not being in that American Ryder Cup team, which would have been unthinkable not that long ago. And, you know, he's an unbelievable player. I think he will turn it around and be in that team. And on the flip side, you've got Ludvig Åberg teeing it up this week as well, the top of PGA Tour University, the young Swedish hope coming out, looks to be the complete package. I was chatting to Niklas Fast earlier this year, who does a lot of work with the Swedish national team, and he was really singing his praises. He is like the complete package, the real deal. And there are some saying Åberg could even make a run at the Ryder Cup this year if he gets a bit of form in America. He's that good, people think. So again, he's teeing up early in his pro career as well, so I'll be keeping an eye on him.
Yeah, absolutely. He started very well in his pro career, as he was in top 25s for Åberg. Good stuff. Okay, let's get on to the second picks then in this event. Dave, who are you throwing up?
Yeah, I'm looking further down the betting. I'm going to go for Brandon Wu, around 80-1. It's one of these ones where I think you've got to get him at the right time. So in the designated events and majors, he's not really been a factor. But if you filter those out and look at his form, we've got 9th at the Canadian Open. We've got 23rd at the Byron Nelson, 3rd in Mexico. Excuse me. And 2 of the last 3 that I mentioned there, he shot a 64 in one of the rounds. So he can go low. And it's no surprise that he's in the top 25 for a birdie average this season. So a guy who does make a lot of par breakers. I think those who watch the PGA Tour closely will remember him finishing runner-up at Pebble Beach earlier this year. Which was good. And then back to Donald Ross form. So he played in this event last year, was 30th. So that was a good solid debut. 8th at Sedgefield, another Donald Ross track. I said Ronald McDonald there. That'd be some claim, wouldn't it? So he was 8th at the Wyndham. And then our new favourite tournament, the Knoxville Open, our new cult favourite tournament, he was 10th in that as well. So he's got this little bank of Donald Ross form, which is good. So, yeah, I just thought there will come a time when he'll pop up again. And I think it will be in an event like this where you need to make lots of birdies. So I thought Brandon Weir was a good price at 80-1.
Yeah, 80-1, 1 point each way for you there. And as you say, yeah, Mexico 3rd was 19 under and pretty much right up there, birdie and eagle scoring. With 4 missed cuts, but 4 top 25s when he makes the cut. So it might be a horses for courses sort of bloke. And on my tips bingo card, I didn't have Knoxville Open getting 5 mentions, but I feel like we might make it 6. Tom Jacobs, who are you throwing in as your final outright?
Yeah, so actually the Knoxville Open doesn't come into this pick, but there's the mention to make sure that carries on. Certainly do look at it. For me, it's Lee Hodges. So this is a player that I put up at the Canadian Open based on the fact that he played so well in the Memorial the week before, and I think Martin maybe put him up for a top 20 on this podcast for that. And it just feels a little bit like what Kit mentioned earlier about Alexander Bjork on the DP World Tour of kind of lifting your base level. I think Hodges is doing that. This was a player that kind of flashed form every now and then in the past, but he's now made 8 of his last 11 cuts, and that's a really good thing. And the crossover I've got is slightly a little bit different. It's the Valero Texas Open. And it basically looks the fact, I just looked at last year's leaderboard, and inside the top 10 were Charlie Hoffman, JJ Spawn, and one other that had just been absolutely brilliant at the Texas Open. And to me, like, that is a great sign. If you can see that, you go back to kind of 2019 and 2020 leaderboard. I won't bore you with all the players that crossed over, but when someone like a Ryan Armour or someone like that kind of crosses over, Brian Stewart, in 2 events, I certainly start to take notice. And the Texas Open is where Lee Hodges finished tied 6th earlier this year. And that was his second best finish on tour behind the American Express, which is another birdie fest event, which I also liked. He's also been 14th on the TPC at San Antonio on the Corn Ferry Tour as well. So multiple times he's been good on that Texas Open layout. And like, I just looked back at last year. After 36 holes last year, he was in third place going into the weekend. And he shot a Saturday 77, which is obviously a little bit of concern, is what is he going to do when he gets in contention? But I think he's improved since then as a player over the past 12 months. And as I said, lifting that kind of baseline, he probably believes now that if he gets himself in that kind of situation again, he could come forward. So yeah, look at kind of the top 10s from last year and certainly the last 4 years. And there's just Texas Open form all over it. Troy Merritt's another one that kind of says that. So I don't know if there's anything much to it. I don't know if it's just the length of the course and the par to it. But there certainly seems to be some crossover. So if it comes to fruition and Lee Hodges has got a sixth there and was third at the halfway mark last year, that's enough for me at a triple digit odds.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, he's moved in a little bit. 90-1 still, though, for 1 point each way, and some healthy places being given by a few bookies there. And Lee Hodges getting some good mentions in that little time. I was obviously listening intently, but Knoxville Open, I've seen Grayson Sig won a few years ago. He's playing, and Sung Jae Im was a runner up. So, just in case, just a bit of info on the Knoxville Open over the years. Thank you very much, guys. That is a very thorough look over both events. Well, great preview. And before we say goodbye, I'll just do a quick recap on all of the tips from the guys. Starting with the Betfred British Masters, and Tom Jacobs kicked us off with Adrian Meronk at 14-1, and that's 3 points each way there. And then Richie Ramsey, 50-1, good for 1.5 points each way. Dave Tindall followed up with 2.5 points each way on Alexander Bjork at 28-1, and then 1 point each way on Callum Hill at 50-1. They both picked top 20 specials as well. So it was Justin Walters at 17-4. 2 points, that was from Tom Jacobs, and then Connor Syme 7-2 for 3 points is from Dave Tindall, and the double is just over 23-1, and that is a point on there. And then over at the Rocket Mortgage Classic, we have Hideki Matsuyama 18-1, 2 points each way, allocated from Tom Jacobs, and Lee Hodges 90-1, 1 point each way. And Dave Tindall brought Taylor Moore at 50-1 for 1.5 points each way. And finally, 1 point each way on Brandon Wu at 80-1 to round off the selections this week. Firstly, a special thanks to Sir Nick Faldo for giving up his time. It's what's a very busy week for him hosting to join us on The Tips. Thanks also to all of our guests for what was a very comprehensive preview into both events this week. You can find them on Twitter at KitOnTheCourse, at Dave Tindall Golf, and at TomJacobs93. So send in any questions, comments, compliments, praise, whatever you want. Send it their way. They'll be very appreciative and get back to you. And good luck with your bets. Remember to always gamble responsibly. And when the fun stops, stop. We will be back next week to see if we have picked a winner. And we'll look ahead to the Made in Himmerland event as the DP World Tour travels to Denmark and the John Deere Classic over on the PGA Tour. Enjoy the golf and see you next time on The Tips.